This is an Audio Wool original.
What are you doing?
I'm going home.
Why?
Well, because it's just too much going on. I mean, I'm afraid. I'm a freshman. This is my first year, and this is too freaky for me. You know, if he comes on campus, he's crazy enough to, you know. The dorms, they're protecting them, and we're all having a good security system. We're telling each other where we're going, but what if he does get in by some odd chance, you know?
So what made you decide to leave?
The last two killings. This is enough for me.
Today they found the bodies of at least three young boys, six more bodies under the John Gacy house. And
one longtime acquaintance describes Dahmer as one weird dude.
Stay tuned for Byron's Serial Corner.
Well, I'm the drifter. I walk the highways, I cross the river that rolls on forever.
When you think of drifter killers, what comes to mind? Henry Lee Lucas, Otis Toole, Arlene Warno, she was a bit of a drifter herself. Even the most prolific serial killer, Samuel Little.
Oh, right.
Remember him?
Yeah, I was gonna, yep. Man, I really, my brain, I feel like my brain did a complete sweep at the end of the year to erase all that gross stuff, so you
Welcome
might have
back.
To like, yep, here
the
we
Byron
are.
Byron serial.
Back in the thick of it, all right.
Crossing state lines in a transient lifestyle, especially in a pre-interstate database world, was the trick for prolonged life-taking, but although self-proclaimed Grim Reaper, a man who claimed his crimes were committed by one of his multiple personalities, a demon named Gemini.
Ooh, a demon. That seems like a weird name for a demon. Well, it seems like a very angelic name for a demon.
It might be more interesting or less than that. We'll talk about it, the inspiration, in a little bit. Danny Rowling, the Gainesville Ripper, got greedy and stuck around one place a little too long following the stalking and murder of five young college students that took place over the course of 4 days in August of 1990.
Treated me kind, sweet destiny.
Okay.
Events that inspired the great Kevin Williamson's first film, Scream. But just how much? Early in my research, every source I found mentioned the Gainesville Ripper case, but I'd yet to hear anything directly from the Kevin's mouth. According to Wiki, the source of that detail was behind the Scream documentary featurette from the...
Oh, wow. Did we copyright that?
Excuse me?
Behind the Scream?
Well, I don't think so.
I mean,
so.
Should we, like, sue?
This has quotations around the Scream part. It's a documentary featurette from the Ultimate Scream DVD box set, which I did find... I mean, I own it, of course, but I also found it on YouTube and scrubbed through it. But I'm still quoteless, Kelly.
Okay.
I'd almost given up when I discovered that the good folks at Film School Rejects, specifically a guy named Will DeGravio, thank you very much.
Degrassi, Junior I?
Excuse me? Had done the work for me. Were you looking around? We should say you're doing your typical Byron Serial Corner listening, eating of ambrosia salad.
Mm, it is New Year ambrosia salad.
New Year, new you.
Unsweetened whipped cream.
Wow.
Organic Greek yogurt.
In 1994, then a struggling actor and writer, Kevin, turned his TV to whatever channel ABC was. Turning Point.
In every story, there is a turning point. From ABC News, a new kind of storytelling. So dramatic, so alive, it feels like a movie. But it's real.
A weekly documentary news magazine that ran from 1994 to 1999. Are you familiar with this program? It examines a single topic each episode, leaning towards the more sensational.
Hmm.
Former members of the Manson family were interviewed on the show. Lots of O.J. Simpson stuff. I'm saying lots. And it was all presented by Diane Sawyer, Peter Jennings, Barb Walters, and more. But this night, their focus was those horrific murders in Gainesville. And it shook him. A few years later, in 1998, during an interview with Barbara Walters for CNN, he said this about that time. I was being scared out of my mind. During the commercial break, I heard a noise, and I had to go search the house. and I went to the living room and a window was open. Mm. And I'd been in this house for 2 days. I'd never noticed the open window. So I got really scared. So I went to the kitchen, got a butcher knife, got a mobile phone. I called a buddy of mine. So Kevin's friend is this guy named David Blanchard, who he was also part of this interview. He, when called by Kevin, began to mock him. He's looking under the beds. He's going out to the garage and looking in the garage. I'm like, well, don't go outside. If you go outside, you're going to go outside, and the killer is going to sneak in the door while you're outside. Mm. Later in the interview, Kevin added, I went to bed that night so spooked I was having nightmares. And I woke up at 3 or 4 in the morning, and I started writing the opening scene to Scream.
So he's just a total wuss.
He's not necessarily a horror guy. He just knew that horror had hit a point where it had dove, and now it was time to revitalize that. And, you know, he wrote a pretty genius meta script.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're talking about this because the new Scream film is coming out over the weekend.
There's a new Scream film?
Okay, Kelly.
All right. I'm just kidding you.
Okay. These killings had many people, especially those enrolled at the University of Florida, go, what is it?
Gators?
Choosing to sleep in groups or not sleep at all. I've read someone didn't sleep for like 5 days during this.
Whoa.
Some even dropped out entirely and left campus.
Okay, Roland? How's it sound? Is the level okay?
It's fine.
Okay, tell us what you're doing here.
I'm getting ready to leave. I've just packed and I'm going to go spend some time at my parents until they either find the killer or you know, we figure out what's going on.
Describe how you feel right now.
A little bit afraid, and angry. Angry that somebody would come into our community and do this and, you know, cause the start of our school semester to, you know, be overcast with such tremendous grief and sorrow and anger and to really disrupt our schedule and our lives.
You sound angry.
I am. Very angry that somebody would do this.
Others just armed themselves for their protection.
You have a rifle there.
Yeah, I do. We were a little bit scared Monday night, and we just didn't know quite what to do. And I knew a friend that had a rifle gun, and since those are legal to have in the house, Ron decided she needed to have a gun for protection. I didn't like the idea. I asked her, and thinking she would say no way, but she didn't. She said she would feel better having one. I think she just wants to know that she has some protection. She lives alone in an apartment. She's not staying alone right now, but she lives alone.
Stephanie?
Yeah. And she just, if she wants one, that's fine with me. I think she's level-headed. She's not going to...
Stephanie, what are you doing here?
Getting a gun for protection in my apartment.
What kind of gun are you buying?
It's a 38 special.
You know how to handle it?
No, but I'm going to find out.
Yeah, that worked really well recently. Parents buying guns for their teenagers.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Going well, yep.
Now, this isn't going to be the detailed multi-part series that a freak monster like Danny deserves. Apologies. Deserves? I don't know. Is there a better way to say that?
Maybe a freak story like Danny's deserves.
Thank you. But I've decided to give you all a brief rundown of this man's misdeeds and some moments surrounding the mayhem that
brief?
Well,
we're already past that.
You've seen my script, haven't you?
Yep.
Some moments that I thought were really interesting, including some tunes. Because although this shithead claims to be a demon, he's got the voice of an angel.
Mm-hmm.
If you want more, Danny and Sandra London, who we'll talk about a bit more later, they wrote a book called The Making of a Serial Killer, The Real Story of the Gainesville Murders in the Killer's Own Words. I have a copy of it, but I haven't really cracked it.
I'm a wonder, I'll keep drifting on. Can't see, honey, why you done me wrong. Hard luck sure has got me, I can't sleep a wing. I'll just have to base it from now.
Born in Shreveport, Louisiana, on May 26, 1954, Daniel Harold Rawling. He goes by Danny, and then I was like, Harold. Harry, is Harry the...
Danny Harry?
Would it be Danny Harry Rawling?
Like Debbie Harry?
That's kind of
but
fun.
Danny Harry.
Unsurprisingly, he claimed to have a childhood full of abuse, And I only say claims because, according to his ex-wife, she hadn't heard him talk about any of that. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
No, it doesn't mean that at all.
Danny's cousin Charles would later say that his father beat the hell out of them, him and his mother.
Oh, fun.
You know, this guy, his father, James, who was a police lieutenant, James and Claudia, they got married when she was only 19. And they found out that they were pregnant with their first child just 2 weeks later, which could be exciting for a newlywed couple, especially back then. But
also, I feel like because it was back then, that might have been the narrative. But they also might have gotten
shotgun wedding.
Well, they might have known that they were pregnant and just not been in a position where they had to announce it yet until 2 weeks after.
James, he didn't want children. So when he found out about this, he lost his shit.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. According to Claudia, her son endured physical abuse at least once or twice a week, but verbally almost daily, with James telling Danny that he was unwanted or an embarrassment. There was no birthdays in the house, no holidays, and they weren't, Jehovah's Witness.
It wasn't for an ethical reason.
Just a bad father. As a child, Danny would run away from home and camp in the woods. And he did some average troubled youth crimes, as well as some creepier ones, like peeping into people's houses.
Killing small animals? Isn't that one of the things?
I didn't read anything about that, but that would be a sign. Unlike Ronald Gene Simmons, Danny didn't make the military his career when he enlisted in the Air Force in 1970. He only lasted 2 years before being discharged, and I'm not certain if it was honorable or not.
Shouldn't that, like, be...
Well, I read honorable, but then I read all this other stuff. According to court documents, his commanding officer told his mother that he was, quote, not mature and didn't have the nervous system or maturity necessary for military life, which I guess that could be grounds for an honorable discharge. But then another source I read said he was kicked out for drug possession.
Curious mixed signals there. Interesting. We need some records.
I see, but this is what I would have done if I was doing a 3-4-5 parter.
I know.
However,
okay.
Moving forward,
yep.
For a bit after returning home, it seemed like he was going to pull off this normal life thing. He got married. He joined one of those Pentecostal churches. Unsure if it was the tossing snakes around kind.
I mean, I don't know that there's a chill Pentecostal.
I think
it's all pretty intense.
He had a daughter. But then things went south. In 1975, the police came knocking on his door. They were looking for Danny. They found his wife and informed her that he had been caught peeping in some windows, which led things to further fall apart. And eventually they got divorced, which kicked off a decade of drifting and escalating crimes. Armed robbery in Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. He was in and out of jail. And he also... while he was traveling, would sexually assault women.
Oh, just like one of his travel.
Yeah, it was okay. Specifically women that looked like his ex-wife. Short.
Healthy.
Dark-haired.
Hey.
Yeah.
Dusty road, empty poke. Always drifting, always broke. That's the story of my life in one short line.
In May of 1989, Danny got in one final heated argument with Lieutenant Dad that ended with him shooting his father in both the stomach and the head.
To hear the full episode, subscribe to Friday Screamium at patreon.com/Friday. That's patreon.com/Friday.
You've been listening to an Audio Wall original. Produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.